Mini episode 614 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
Welcome to mini episode 614 of the FDH Lounge. It's our sixth conversation with the one and only Bob Barker. From 2009 to the present, we've been privileged to have incredible discussions with him about his life, his career, and his ongoing interests, not least of which, his activism on behalf of animals. So sit back, relax, and listen as this singular American legend talks more about his amazing journey.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 614. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here to tell you that we have a truly extraordinary show for you today. The origins of it date back to May 20th, 2009, part of the 58th episode in our previous format. In the midst of a book tour promoting his long-awaited memoirs, Priceless Memories, we received a visit from a true legend. The FDH Lounge, the show where nothing is off-topic, did something that we never could have envisioned. We played host to Bob Barker. Knowing what the occasion demanded, we prepared very hard, battled through the nerves, and we had a great conversation with him. What followed was even more unexpected. We did it again and again. The respect inherent in Bob's willingness to keep having these great conversations with us is one of the greatest honors that you could have personally or professionally. We have at the FDH Lounge a link to a collection of the five previous episodes back-to-back, 2 hours, 10 minutes worth, and all. That's at thefdhlounge.com. We'll surely be updating that after today. Bob's a man very much beloved by his public, and while not begrudging him the freedom of his retirement years, they miss his constant presence. They're always glad to hear he's doing well, and for Bob to be addressing those fans via this show is truly indescribable for us. We'll be covering some familiar territory today from our previous conversations with Bob. As we did in 2011, we'll be discussing Bob's thoughts on his beloved St. Louis Cardinals, and maybe this will be good luck for them. That's the last time they won the World Series. Bob's very lucky getting to watch them in October every year, and as a lifelong Indians fan, I can only wonder what that's like, but we'll get into all of that. More on his durable work in his post-Price is Right years, his tireless efforts to stop animal mistreatment in all its various forms. During that same conversation in 2011, we spoke on the heels of the Zanesville animal massacre, and as Bob correctly predicted at that time, states like my native Ohio have moved in the direction of abolishing these private, unregulated zoos. So we'll be talking baseball, animals, anything else on Bob's mind these days. Again, I have to preface this by saying how much I appreciate the graciousness of Bob and his great advisor, Henry Bollinger, in accepting our initial invitation that was extended by guest booker Steve Cervillo and the chance to continue the give and take ever since then. So now it's time for something that could never get old for me, the chance to say, Bob Barker, please come on down once again to the FDH Lounge. Bob, how are you today, sir? It's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, I'll tell you, I am top-notch after that introduction. That was one of the world's great introductions, and I sincerely appreciate it. It's good to be with you again, Rick.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Well, again, you certainly deserve it. It's been a heck of a career thus far, and still continuing on with your animal work now. And want to get into all of that with you. I know that the occasion for having you on, first and foremost, was, again, another what I think is going to be deep run for your St. Louis Cardinals. I'll tell you, I'm one of the people who picked them before the season to win the World Series. I've got a hazy crystal ball, though, because I thought my Indians would take it out of the American League with the pitching they had. Unfortunately, we didn't have any hitting to go with it. But I saw the Cardinals coming the whole year, I'll tell you. That seemed to be a minority opinion, but they're solid. They're always in the mix. They've got great balance. You guys have really kind of withstood a lot, though, to get here. You go back to the offseason, the very terrible loss of the young superstar Oscar Tavares, the loss of Adam Wainwright for just about all of the year this year. You guys have battled through injuries, but still won 100 games in baseball's toughest division. So I got to think you got to be feeling pretty optimistic when you look at everything they've battled through to get to this point.
Well, optimistic is an understatement. And I understand that Wainwright is coming back. In fact, he pitched one game, didn't he?
Yes.
It didn't work out well, but after all, he's going to be rusty. But he may come on strong now. I hope so. Because, as you've said, they've had some problems. The young players are going to have to come through for them. They're going to depend on a lot of them. Of course, I go back to the old Gas House gang. I became interested in the Cardinals when Dizzy Dean was the man of the hour. I lived on the Rosebud Indian Reservation up in South Dakota when I was a kid, but I used to go down every summer to my grandmother's in Springfield, Missouri, and it was a farm club for the Cardinals. And I joined the Knothole Gang, and I got to go to every game free, and I became a real Cardinal fan.
Absolutely, and that's something that in today's modern culture I think we kind of tend to lose sight of is before the westward expansion of the Dodgers and the Giants in 58, it was the Cardinals that were the far western team in all of Major League Baseball, and that entire following that they had out there far and wide, and the vast radio network, and to this day I know there's a big following in places like Oklahoma where they used to listen to the radio games and still do. And
Greasy Dick Beer, made in St. Louis, and everybody, and as you just said, in the whole area, listened to the ball games. It was the good old days. That's what it was.
Oh yeah, for a lot of those years, also Harry Carey calling the
Harry
games,
Carey?
And absolutely a very memorable part of that.
The first T-shirt I ever had as a kid, it was Dizzy Dean and Paul Dean on it, and under it it said "Me and Paul." Dizzy Dean, you know, he used to always say, "Me and Paul, we're going to win 30 this year, 30 each, there's 60, and things like that. He was a great personality.
Absolutely, and I have to say, evident, if we didn't know it already, all of the media training that you've had over the years, Bob, because you actually anticipated my next question in talking about the Gas House Gang. I wanted to ask you about how this era relates to your favorite eras of Cardinals baseball, because you had that one with the Gas House Gang that kind of bled into the Stan Musial years and a couple of pennants in the 40s. You had that clump in the 60s there with the two World Series and the pennant from 64 to 68. You had the Whitey Herzog years, your good friend, when he was running the team in the 80s.
That's
the World
after
Series,
I got
pennants.
My contract.
Whitey
gave me a contract. I told you about that, I think.
$1 knock a pitch, right?
That's right. He had heard that I was a real Cardinal fan. I was in St. Louis to do a beauty pageant, I think. And he invited me out to the ballpark and gave me a jacket that I still wear. And we talked baseball for a while. And he gave me a contract, and $1 a year so long as I do not pitch. And I haven't pitched. By golly, now that I've mentioned this, I haven't had my dollar here for several years either.
Whitey's got to make good on that. But
yeah.
You've got that era there. So not exactly every 20 years, but it does seem like it's kind of coming clumps. You know, the 30s into the 40s, the 60s, the 80s, and now this great run that we've been on now ever since 2004, a couple of pennants, two World Series, maybe a third one this year. How does this era stack up to some of your favorite ones of the past?
Well, of course, the Gas House Gang will always be my favorite team, but I must confess that they've just been great in recent years too. You mentioned Stan Musial. I told you I was in the Knothole Gang in Springfield, Missouri. Stan came through there. He played there for about 15 minutes before he went up to the big club. But Frank Crespi, remember him? He was there for a while. We had a lot of them.
That's incredible. I don't think I've ever seen an Indians player in the minor leagues who's gone on to be anything more than a peanut vendor. That's great to see Stan Musial at that level. That is something worth bragging about, Bob. You got to see him win. That's amazing. You know, much less, you know, one of the greatest careers of all time. And I saw a notice the other day. I don't know if this came across your desk or not, but for the Hall of Fame Museum that they have in St. Louis, they're celebrating the Cardinals. There's a big mural that somebody made out of them, and they took the stickers off of these Rubik's cubes, and they basically made it as like a series of giant dots on there, and made his face. And I saw it online. It's a really incredible picture of him. So
No, I haven't seen that.
It's amazing. It really, really is. It shows you to this day how beloved the man really is, and you know, arguably the greatest player in the history of that franchise. And so many people that have made their mark.
I think he was the greatest player in the history of several franchises. He was really a sight to behold. He really was.
He was. You know, in that stiff competition, if we're to say that, because you go back to, as you said, Dizzy Dean and Bob Gibson.
Oh, Dizzy Dean. Dizzy Dean was such a great personality. Everybody loved him all over the league. They loved him, and it was just tragic that he hurt his arm. But he certainly had some great years.
Oh, absolutely! So many top-notch guys that they had there, and Frankie Frisch when it was the Gas House Gang.
That's
on
right.
Through the years, even yep. More recently, Ozzie Smith, Albert Pujols, some of the names there. And we come back to somebody we talked about beforehand, Adam Wainwright, a guy who was coming out of the bullpen in that 2006 World Series. That's a guy that looks like he's going to etch his name alongside the other ones there, Bob. This has been one of probably the greatest pitching runs in the history of that franchise.
It all begins with pitching.
Yes.
You've got to have pitching or you're not going to win much. But this year, the Cardinals have had a splendid year. And with Wainwright coming back, I hope what was his foot, wasn't it? Something that happened to his foot?
It was, I think you're close. I think it was his Achilles. And that's
Achilles
tough one
tendon.
To come back from.
That is tough. That's tough. But hopefully he'll be.
Yeah, you know, pushing off to get your power. Yeah.
You talked about them. They were probably they're certainly one of the best teams in all of baseball.
Sure.
And they're definitely the best there in the Central League, and they always get tough in the World Series. Just ask Kershaw; he'll tell you.
Yeah, they've had his number the last couple of years. Arguably the best pitcher of his generation, and they have shut him down the last couple of times out. I'm sure he would not be looking forward to facing them again, as it looks like he might.
They're gentlemanly about it. They let him show off for 7 innings, and then they knock him out.
Yeah, they're good guys in how they go about it. But segueing somewhat out of the sports world here, Bob, I wanted to pass along. I received today a notification that an upcoming guest on our show from the world of sports entertainment saw that we were going to be having you on and wanted to extend his very best wishes. Chris Jericho, who, of course, you so memorably tangled with on The Price is Raw back in 2009. We talked to you after that show. And you and Mr. Jericho had a fun little skit there, as you did with a couple of the other wrestlers that night. I know in talking to you in early 2011, it was looking like you indicated at that time that you might be going to WrestleMania that year when it was in Atlanta, and that obviously ended up falling through. But I'm just curious about if that might be the case for any of the ones coming up here. Are there plans possibly to get to WrestleMania one of these years?
I would go back. I had a splendid time with him, and particularly with Chris. Chris is a very impressive young man. He's a beautiful physical specimen, of course, and he's a very bright young fella. And he really made my visit to the show a pleasure. We had a lot of fun and got a lot of laughs, which is important.
Looked like you were having a lot of fun, yeah. And that, he's a very gifted guy, as you said, a great specimen, second-generation athlete, with his dad being in the NHL, so somebody who really knows his way around the hockey rink as well as the ring. But, he sent along his best wishes to you on the occasion of you appearing on the show again here. And I thought that was very interesting. You had talked about previously about how your ties in wrestling had gone back to the days of Gorgeous George. And, of course,
that's
there was
right.
That big...
I saw Gorgeous George before anybody, practically. It was when I was in Springfield, Missouri there. I went back after I got out of the Navy. I went back to finish college, and by that time I was married. And I ran the concessions at the Shrine Mosque where they had wrestling. And Gorgeous George came through there before very many people even knew about him. It was just, but they loved it. Oh, he had the place rocking any time he wrestled there. And a lot of the others that got their start there as well. This wrestling now, I don't know, is it still as popular? It was just all over television there for a while, but I don't think I've seen as much of it now.
The ratings have been down a little bit this year, but by and large, it's still doing pretty well. They seem to be building a model where they build towards WrestleMania every year, sort of like the Super Bowl. So if that does well, that seems to be the kind of main thing that they're pushing towards. So in a way, it does seem like they're doing pretty well and making money, even if the ratings aren't what they used to be. But I'm struck by what you said about Gorgeous George coming through Springfield. So in other words, you got to see a lot of the greats coming through Springfield before they were anybody. Gorgeous George, Stan Musial. Is there anybody else that came through there before they were famous?
Well, do you remember Frank Sinatra?
Yes.
I saw Frank Sinatra at the Shrine Mosque there in Springfield, Missouri, when he was singing with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. And Tommy Dorsey introduced him as a young man who had just joined the band, and this is the first time that he had ever sung with a band, and he sang Indian Summer. And I was there with my young lady friend, who was became my wife, Dorothy Jo, and I'm tone deaf, but we listened to Sinatra, and I said, honey, I said, how is he? I said, is he pretty good? And she said, yeah, he is pretty good. And he was pretty good. But years later, I was narrating the Rose Parade for about 20-some years there on CBS, and he was the Grand Marshal. And I always taped an interview with the Grand Marshal before the parade that we would play while the Marshal rode by. And I was talking with Frank after we did the interview. And I said, you know, I was in Springfield, Missouri, when you came through there with Tommy Dorsey. And I said, was that really the first time that you had ever sung with a band? He said, could have been. It could have been. And a good friend of mine from Springfield became a top disc jockey in New York. And he had Frank on his show one time, and Jim and Lowe, that was his name, Jim Lowe, and I were very good friends, and we had double dated that night. And Jim said, you know, I was in Springfield when you came through, and the same thing. And Sinatra said, it could have been. It could have been. And you know, if it was Joplin, Missouri, wherever the band went next, and he said that same thing. I bet he said it could have been to everybody because he didn't want to disillusion them. You know, I thought it was kind of him.
Well, regardless, you got to see Frank Sinatra before he was Frank Sinatra, so to speak. That's incredible.
We saw all the big bands of that era that came through there. We really enjoyed it too. And Jim, he had always, even in high school, he wanted to be a disc jockey, and he became one of the biggest disc jockeys in New York, and had a wonderful life. He's still living there in New York, but he doesn't work anymore. But he knows more about the big band era, I'll bet you, than any man in the country.
Wow.
It was an exciting time in music. It really was. And it was an exciting time for the Cardinals, too.
Yes, they coincided. It all ties together. You're right about that. It was a great era for them. Yeah. And, that is wonderful, because I'll tell you, the next thing I wanted to ask you about here in terms of, again, your great recall of so many great things from the 20th century here, I was prompted in my head to ask you a question based on an experience this past summer. And my great-aunt Josie, my very beloved great-aunt, just turned 100. And now, like you, she fit the profile for somebody of great longevity, the way she always took care of herself and kept barreling through 100 and going strong, I'm very happy to say. So I'm curious, because it always seems like whenever the human mind turns the corner from into the 90s, you're always thinking about what comes next. I know in the 1990s, we were all obsessed with the new millennium and what's it going to be like in 2000. So is it the same way with human nature? You're going to, of course, be 92 on December 12th. Is it the same thing of where you're already starting to think about that a little bit, or is it probably a while before that really starts kind of passing through your head?
Well, it's been passing through my head, of course. And unfortunately, I think that our country, you and I are talking here about the old days, and everything was so much better than it is now. I had the good fortune to enjoy that period right after World War II, when we were just the dominant country and the entire world, the whole world looked up to us, and all was well. And now it seems to me that we're just, if we don't get straightened out with the new administration, I don't know what's going to become of the United States. It's such a disappointment. Now, I know that I sound like an old man, which I am. You always like the old days, but I think a lot of the people who are much younger than I feel the same way. It's just not the same happy, I'm looking forward to tomorrow country, I don't think. And it's sad. It really is sad. We had our great, great years, and I hope that we have more ahead of us.
I agree with you, Bob, and I have to say, this is something we've talked about on the show recently, and I have something of a theory on that since you bring it up, and I wonder, for a man who has seen as much history as you do, if this makes any sense to you as it does to me. But it seems like this country really hasn't had too many good days, if any at all, since 9/11. It was 9/11 into the Iraq War, into the economic downturn, which has been a very long one, and in some quarters is still going on, and there is a real sour mood in the country that keeps getting remarked upon with the 2016 election, and the analysts can't seem to point to one thing or another, but I think it's just a long general fatigue of, when are we going to get back to the way it was before 9/11? When are we going to start having good days in this country again? Do you kind of get the same vibe?
Yes, I feel exactly the same. I think you've drawn the picture very accurately. I think a lot of our problems of today, we need someone guiding us down the right path, I think, really. And I don't think that the administration that we have now is going to get it done. Well, they aren't. They don't have time now anyway. It's been a rough 8 years, I feel. And I only hope that whoever becomes the new president, man or woman, can try to straighten it out and try to bring back some of the pride in our country. And this idea of leading from behind has not worked. Every country in the world has lost all of its respect for the United States, it seems to me. And some of the stuff that Putin is pulling right now is a good demonstration of that. And we're torn apart now. I grew up in Springfield, Missouri, which was a real southern place to be. And we had no black and white problem there, really. And now we have, here in Los Angeles, there are parts of the city that I wouldn't even drive through. And so dangerous. And policemen, shooting policemen, walking up to a car and sticking a gun in the car and killing a police officer. It's just madness. It just breaks my heart to read the papers sometimes.
I agree with you on that. There are many sad things that are happening. But I have to tell you, I thought about you during the first presidential debate back in August here, actually in my hometown of Cleveland. But during a previous visit to the show, you had talked about somebody who I personally have no love for, Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, and about how he had pandered to the farm interests in Iowa by opposing that bill about the caging. You had mentioned about that and Chris Christie.
Yes, he voted
with that. Yes.
Right.
So that was, I got to tell you, it was fun for me to see Senator Rand Paul take him down when they were arguing about the Fourth Amendment there. And Chris Christie, I think, got put in his place that night. I was thinking of you and I was smiling when that happened.
Well, Chris Christie, I think, is a thing of the past. He's not going to do anything this time around. He may try again. I have worked for so many years on animal rights, and we have things that we're doing that are just working out beautifully. And this ag law, they call it, these animal abusers on farms and in dairies and so on are exposed by an organization that's famous for it, is Mercy for Animals. They have undercover fellows who get in there and get the whole thing on tape, so there's no argument who did what to who and so on. And many states now, we have that, we have a law that they can do it. But some of the states are trying to pass these laws that they can't do it. And Christie went along with the wrong side at one time. I don't know. He may be a good governor, but he certainly lost a lot of animal rights votes, I'll bet. But so be it. We're still making great strides, and we will continue to. And it's a better world for animals right now than it was 10 years ago, I'll tell you that. We owe it. As a guy who's been in it for years, I'll tell you that we owe a lot to the media because it's a matter of making people aware. 70% of the homes in the United States are supposed to have pets, and Americans love animals, but they love their own animal and maybe the neighbor's dog or cat or whatever, but they don't know what's going on in a lot of places. And we have to make them aware, and it's with radio and television and newspapers that we've accomplished that. And as Americans become more aware, Americans do something about it because they do love animals.
That's definitely true. And I have on that subject here, I have a list of bullet points here from your good friend and associate Henry Bollinger. He passed along some things here, so I don't know which of these things you want to talk about in more detail, but I'll just kind of put it out there. I understand you are presently working with Animal Defenders International in rescuing wild animals from circuses around the world with Bolivia, Mexico, and Peru. That's a big present one. 33 lions from Peru and Colombia in the biggest airlift of its kind, I understand.
That's right, and I'm glad you brought up Animal Defenders International. They're popularly known as ADI. Their first office was in London, but they are now all over the country. They have a couple of offices here in the United States, and they're all over South America, too. And I've worked with animal organizations almost of every description, of almost all types. And ADI is one of the very best. They don't just talk about it. They do it. They get it done. And what they've accomplished now is just astounding in South America. They've been concentrating lately. And they, what you've just mentioned, they have all of the circus animals. There are no circus animals now in Peru and no circus animals in Colombia. They'd already done, I believe it's Bolivia and Ecuador. But they're getting these animals out of there and getting them, some of them into Africa, getting them into the areas where they belong, in sanctuaries where they can live the life that nature intended. And I'm just proud to be working with them. I really am. One is the one I mentioned there, Mercy for Animals. Mercy for Animals is great on this getting in and getting things on tape. Only recently they exposed just terrible cruelty.
You had mentioned sanctuaries. I know that, of course, extends to elephants as well. I know you've been involved in trying to rescue elephants from zoos in Los Angeles and California. And according to my notes here, there's a two-year campaign to move three elephants from the Toronto Zoo. And
well,
they went to the Paws Animal Sanctuary in San Andreas, California, correct?
That's right, Paws Sanctuary. We got them out of there. It was not easy. I went up there a couple of times, but they had a wonderful organization in Toronto, in Canada. Well, they work in the United States, too, called Zoo Check, that's what they call themselves. And Canadian organization. We worked with them, and we got those three elephants out of there, and they were in terrible condition. They were confined on a small space. They hadn't been able to move around, and they were muscle-bound and all this sort of thing and had trouble with their feet. And they got out there to Paws, and I tell you, it's a whole new world. They're just running around, actually running around up there. And they roaming over hillsides and tearing up trees and just living the life that the good Lord intended. Now they're wonderful. Paws Sanctuary.
That's amazing.
They have elephants all over the place. They have bears. They have lions. They have animals of various descriptions, and they're a wonderful group. They are really. I think that if you're going to put an animal in captivity, it'll be nearer to the life that nature intended for it in Paws Sanctuary than any place else in the world. I don't know of any place that they're just great.
That's incredible. And I know also, too, when it comes to pets, the thing that you're the most associated with, because you made it a famous catchphrase with The Price is Right, having pets spayed and neutered. And I know that there was some effort going on here.
Well, that's right.
You got it fast in Los Angeles, your backyard for the show. So very interesting that where the show took place all those years, you got it taken care of there. I understand you have lobbying efforts now, New York, Chicago, Dallas, San Antonio, and the state of California underway, possibly for similar water laws. Yes,
absolutely. I close The Price is Right every day by just saying, help control the pet population, have your pets spayed or neutered. And I did it for so long and so regularly that someone suggested that on my tombstone it should say, have your pets spayed or neutered. And my brother, whose sense of humor I don't particularly admire, said, no, I think it said on his tombstone, come on down.
Could go either way, huh?
No, I don't want that implication. I want
right.
to go on up. I don't want to go
absolutely.
On but he thought that was just hilarious, and so did everybody else, unfortunately. But
yes.
I've been plugging away at it for years and years and years, and I am just delighted that we have really made inroads in the animal overpopulation. One of the biggest problems, so far as animals are concerned in the United States, is overpopulation. There are just too many cats and dogs born for all of them to have homes. And you'll never, some people say, well, we'll adopt our way out of it. Well, you'll never get it done. Maybe in some small town you can get them to get all the animals adopted, but you're not going to do it in Los Angeles or New York or Chicago or any place like that. It'll never work. And the only answer is spay and neuter. And I'm proud to be called the guru of spay and neuter.
a tremendous legacy. You've done a lot, obviously, for animals, and very admirable to have used your platform to try to advance something positive. I would think that is something that everybody could agree on, that it's very admirable to be able to leverage celebrity in such a way. And, of course, again, that has been a big key, I think, as to why people have rallied to you over the years and just sort of appreciated the essential decency that they have seen in you. And I have to tell you, Bob, again, that's what makes it such an incredible honor to have you on here now for the sixth time and have these great conversations with us. And to bring this one around, I would just say, I guess, until we speak again, because I look forward to whatever our next chapter might be with you, but I just can't tell you from the bottom of my heart how grateful we are to be able to catch up with you and bring these tales to your public. Everybody still can't get enough of you, so it's great to be able to talk to you about this stuff.
Well, Rick, I'll tell you, it's just as I said earlier, without the media, I don't think we would have made the strides that we have made. And I can only tell you that the time I've spent with you today, I sincerely appreciate, I've enjoyed every minute of it too. I love to talk about me, but I just hope that you will invite me back, and we'll talk about you.
Oh, I'm a lot more boring than you, Bob, but I appreciate the thought. It goes without saying, it's an open invitation, and really whenever we can coordinate this with Henry, we would love to do this. We just appreciate you fitting us into your schedule when it's been possible. And again, thank you so much. I'll wish you in advance here in the next couple months a happy birthday, 92 and going strong at that point. And until we catch up again, Bob, again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very, very much. And don't forget, have your pets spayed or neutered.
Absolutely. Good way to bring this show around on, and only fitting. Thank you so much, Bob Barker, for being here with us today. And thank you all, everybody, for being a part of the audience for FDH Lounge mini-episode number 614.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio. Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.